Friends, you have all assembled here this evening and will continue for next 2 days to discuss and to understand the relevance of Vipassana in the modern age. It is relevant. The sun rises in the east to dispel the darkness of the night every morning. It was relevant yesterday. It is relevant today. It will continue to be relevant tomorrow. The light of Vipassana, the light of wisdom, the light of self-realization, truth-realization, is always relevant. All around there is darkness. All around there is misery. All around there is ignorance. We keep on generating vibrations of impurities, negativities, anger, hatred, ill will, animosity, ego, and the entire atmosphere around gets charged with these vibrations. So much of pollution. We talk of this chemical pollution. This pollution is, although invisible, it is much more harmful. The pollution that we keep on creating everywhere and the resultant misery because of that. Vipassana is the answer. When we purify our mind by this technique of Vipassana, then we start generating vibrations of love, vibration of compassion, vibration of goodwill, to dispel the darkness of the vibration of ignorance, negativities. This was necessary in the past also. This is necessary today, and this will be necessary always. The society is suffering in different ways. So many problems in human society, in different fields, everywhere, there are problems, tensions, strain, conflicts, misery, nothing but misery. How to come out of that misery? There must be a way out. The saints and sages of our country and also of other countries, the enlightened ones, they found out a way. Purify the mind. So long as the mind is impure, it will keep on generating such unhealthy vibrations which will make the entire atmosphere full of misery. Each individual has to do that. We want to reform the entire society. Society is made of human beings. Man matters most. Every individual has to take a dip inside and come out of the misery. If the individual cannot come out of the misery, how can the society come out of the misery? Each individual is so important. man matters most. And when you talk of the man, mind matters most. It is the mind which is creating all these different types of pollutions, harming itself, harming others. Unless one starts observing the truth within oneself, all understanding at the intellectual level will not give the right answer. Intellect has its own limitations, but experience of the truth inside is limitless. One has to realize the truth within oneself at the experiential level. What is this physical structure to which I keep on calling I, mine? At the intellectual level, one keeps on saying, body is not I, body is not mine, body is not my soul. But at the actual level, one has identified oneself with this physical structure, I, mine. And what is this mental structure, which again at the intellectual level one keeps on saying, mind is not I, mind is not mine, mind is not my soul. The body, the mind, they are impermanent, they keep on changing. How can these be I? But at the actual level, so much of identification, and not only identification, tremendous amount of attachment to this physical structure, to this mental structure, the combination of the two. Tremendous amount of attachment which brings nothing but misery, nothing but misery. Reading the scriptures, listening to discourses are good. They give us a guidance. But they can't make us realize the truth about ourselves. For that we have to go ourselves deep inside. And this is what Vipassana does. Know thyself. Know thyself not merely at the intellectual level. Know thyself not merely at the devotional level, but at the actual level, at the experiential level. Once you start realizing the truth of this mind-matter phenomenon, a constant interaction going on, currents, undercurrents, cross-currents, how one is constantly influencing the other, how one is constantly getting influenced by the other, and one does not know what is happening inside. The surface of the mind, a very small part of the mind, the intellect of the mind, keeps on seeing things outside and keeps on giving importance to all that, does not understand the reality of the cause of my misery inside. Someone says, I am miserable, I am very unhappy, because so-and-so insulted me, so-and-so abused me, so-and-so is misbehaving, this situation is not good for me, that's why I am very unhappy. True. At the apparent level it is true. But when you go deep inside, the entire cause of the misery lies inside. As the entire cause of happiness lies inside, not outside. The apparent truth is there, of course, but the actual truth deep inside. One becomes very angry. Somebody has abused me, I become very angry. I retaliate. I abuse, I hit him, I kill him. What I have done? By killing somebody, what I have done. I have harmed that person. But before harming that person, I have harmed myself. I have stolen something which is not mine. I have harmed that person to whom this thing belongs. I have harmed that person. But before harming that person, I have harmed myself. Every unwholesome action, vocal action or physical action, every unwholesome action, the root is the mind. You can't kill anybody unless you generate tremendous amount of anger, hatred, ill will, animosity. When that becomes too strong, then you take action at the physical level. Before harming that person, you harmed yourself. The moment you start generating negativity in the mind, the law of nature is such, you are punished then and there. By killing somebody, the laws of the government will take action, you will be punished, it will take time. But the law of nature does not wait. The moment you have generated impurity in your mind, you are punished, you become very miserable. The moment you generate anger, you become very miserable. Because you don't see inside what is happening inside. When anger arises, the outside object of the anger becomes so predominant. I am angry because of this person. I am angry because of this situation. And that becomes so important for me. I want to rectify things outside. You ask a mother-in-law, why there is so much of misery in your family? Oh, our family has become very miserable because of this new daughter-in-law who has come. She has created so much difficulty. If she improves herself a little bit, there will be so much of peace, so much of peace. Ask the daughter-in-law, and she will say, this old lady, if she improves a little, everything will be all right in our family. A father wants his son to get improved, son wants his father to get improved, brother wants other brother to get improved. Nobody starts understanding what is happening to me. What is mistaken in me? When you start practicing Vipassana and you start experiencing the truth within yourself, it becomes so clear. The words of the enlightened one become so clear. Pubbe hanati attanang paccha hanati so pare. First, one kills oneself, kills the peace and harmony of oneself, and then only one kills the peace and harmony of others. Every unwholesome action of the vocal, at the vocal level or the physical level, starts with a negativity in the mind. You can't steal unless you generate greed. You can't commit sexual misconduct unless you generate tremendous amount of passion in you. Some impurity or the other must arise in the mind before you take an unwholesome action at the physical level or the vocal level. You are harming yourself. Without understanding, you are harming yourself. You keep on generating negativity and you become miserable. All the time negativity makes you miserable, miserable, miserable. Somebody abused you. Somebody abused you to make you miserable. You accepted that abuse. You become miserable. That person wanted you to become unhappy, so he abused you. He abused only once. You became miserable once. But there is no limit of your misery. That person abused you and gone away. He might have even forgotten. You keep on repeating that drama on the platform of your own mind. He abused me like this. He abused me like this. And you keep on generating anger after anger, anger after anger. What are you doing? You are harming yourself. You are hitting yourself. What are you doing? One does not understand at all. These discourses won't help. To some extent one will say, yes, this looks very reasonable. This is quite true. But the moment you go out of this hall, all that is forgotten. When you start realizing yourself, making the journey inside, then you find, every time I generate any impurity in the mind, the law of nature is such, I become miserable. I start harming myself. I start others, I harm others later on. But first I harm myself. I harm myself. The more and more you realize that, you start coming out of it. Even by mistake, you have placed your hand on burning fire. It burns. It burns, and you don't like burning. Next time you are very careful. I should not touch the burning fire. It burns. In the same way, if you keep on realizing these truths, the reality, going deep inside, look, I have generated negativity. It is burning. I become miserable. No, I don't like misery. I should not do this again. This is how you can come out of it. Not by these sermons, not by playing intellectual games, not by accepting things only at the emotional level. Buddha said so, or Mahavir said so, or Krishna said so, or Isa Masih said so, or Prophet Muhammad said so, and I have got great faith, great devotion in their words, so I accept it. You are just accepting at the devotional level. Or you might have used your intellect, you might have argued, well, this is good and that is bad, so I must do only something which is good. I must perform only positive actions, not negative actions. Again, at the intellectual level, not at the actual level, at the experiential level. This is what is needed. This is what Vipassana does. Whether one is working in this field of the society or that field in the society makes no difference. Human being is human being. Whether one belongs to this country or that country makes no difference. Human being is human being. Whether one belongs to this religion or that religion makes no difference. Human being is human being. Whether one belongs to this caste or that caste, no difference. Human being is human being. Out of ignorance. Out of ignorance about ourselves. When we talk of vidya or vidya, it is not academic vidya. Vidya means the wisdom of the reality within ourselves. Vidya from Vedan, and Vedan is experience. The wisdom that you get by your own experience. When you talk of pragya, pratyaksha jnana, when you say sthita pragya, what's sthita pragya? Your own wisdom that you get by your own experience and you get established in that. Now it is paroksha jnana. Somebody has given a sermon. It is in the scriptures. This is not your wisdom. You have not experienced it. This is not pragya. This is not panya. When you experience it, then it is your wisdom. The wisdom of somebody else can help us to give guidance, to show us the way. That's all. Or give some inspiration. That's all. It cannot liberate us from our misery. Our own wisdom, our own vidya at the level of Vedana, your own experience, that only can liberate, nothing else. And this is what was realized by the enlightened one. This was realized by every enlightened one. At the intellectual level, we all understand, because from the very young age, we keep on hearing good things, religious things, spiritual things. Don't get entangled in the sensorium, the sensual field, the vision for the eyes, the words for the ears, the smell for the nose, the taste for the tongue, something tangible for the body, or the thought for the mind, the six sense doors and their respective objects. Don't get entangled in them. Because of them, don't generate anger, don't generate hatred, don't generate craving, no raga, no dvesha. We have been listening there, and we understand. There should be no raga, there should be no dvesha, because every time one generates raga, one harms oneself, harms others. Every time one generates dvesha, aversion, harms oneself, harms others. Yes, the teaching is wonderful, very good. How does it help me? Unless I realize myself. And this is the realization of an enlightened person. The sense doors and the object of the sense, when they come in contact, there is another, something more is happening inside. There is one link which is missing, and that link is very important. The six sense doors, salayatan, in the language of those days of India, salayatan, six sense doors and their respective six objects. Salayatan pachaya phasa, the six sense doors come in contact with the six objects of these six sense doors. Phasa, the touch, parsha. Then what happens? Bhasa pachaya vedana, the interaction of mind and matter started. As soon as there is a contact of the word with the ear sense door, or the shape or color or light with the eye sense door, or the smell with the nose sense door, or the touch with the tongue sense door, or something tangible at the body sense door, or a thought at the mind sense door, as soon as there is a contact, something starts happening in the body. Some biochemical reaction or the other, some electromagnetic reaction or the other. There is some sensation which starts in the body. Like you strike a gong and it starts vibrating. Bhasa pachaya vedana. The moment there is a contact, there is a sensation. One part of the mind, which we call intellect, in those days it was called sanya. Now this part of the mind, its job is to recognize what happened. A word has come at the sense door of the ear. What is this word? One part of the mind will just cognize some sound has come in contact with the ear. That's all. Now this second part of the mind, sanya, the intellect, will start recognizing it. What word? Oh, word of abuse. Or word of praise. This is the job of this second part of the mind, the second segment, important segment of the mind, recognizes. And not only recognizes, it gives valuation also. Abuse, very bad. Praise, wonderful. This is the job of the second part of the mind. But the enlightened one understands the moment the word touched the ear sense door, there was a vibration. The whole body started vibrating. There was a neutral vibration. And the moment this part of the mind says it is bad, this vibration changes into unpleasant vibration. The entire structure of the body starts vibrating unpleasant, unpleasant. Dukhada vedana, dukhada vedana. Word is word. A word of praise has come to the ear sense door. The first part of the mind, consciousness, vijnana, will say, there is something happening. It cognizes. The second part of the mind says, what is happening? Word, what word? Oh, this is word of praise. Wonderful. And then immediately this neutral vibration which was there becomes very pleasant. Pleasant vibration. This is the third part of the mind, Vedana. In today's India, the word Vedana has only one meaning, misery, unhappiness, pain, sorrow. 25 centuries back, Vedana was Vedana. Sukha Vedana, Dukha Vedana, Asukha Adukha Vedana. A pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, or a neutral feeling, all were called Vedana. Now this is a Sukha Vedana. That was a Dukha Vedana. Third part of the mind starts experiencing it. Ah, this is Sukha Vedana. Oh, this is Dukha Vedana. Then immediately the fourth part of the mind starts working, and the enlightened one found out that is Sankhara. That part of the mind reacts. A Dukha Vedana, unpleasant sensation, it reacts with aversion. I don't like it. I don't like it. At the apparent level, it looks that I am reacting to the abuse. I don't like the abuse. But at the actual level, I am reacting to this unpleasant sensation going on within me. This is the missing link. You don't know to what you are reacting. At the apparent level, it feels that I am reacting to these words of praise. I like it. More praise. I want more praise. But at the actual level, the deeper level, you are reacting to the pleasant sensation that you are feeling inside. If you don't know that means not at the intellectual, if you don't experience that, if you don't realize that, how can you come out of it? This part of your mind, the surface level of the mind, so-called conscious mind, such a small part of the mind, you can purify it, keeping on understanding, no, I should not react with aversion. I should not react with craving. Both are bad. I must keep equanimity. Yes, to some extent you keep equanimity. That is only a very small part of the mind. The bigger part of the mind, which you say unconscious or half conscious, is not unconscious. It's constantly conscious. Day and night it is conscious. Conscious of the sensations of the body. And day and night it is a prisoner of its own habit pattern. The habit pattern is to react. The moment it experiences something pleasant, it reacts with craving. The moment it experiences something unpleasant, it reacts with aversion. That continues day and night, day and night. This is our problem. The root is there, at the depth of the mind, not at the surface of the mind. We have to rectify the problem at the depth of the mind, at the root of the mind. If you keep on rectifying a tree at the surface level and forget the root is decaying, the tree is bound to decay. The whole process of vipassana takes you to that depth. Look how this mind is working, how the mind and matter, their interaction is going on. A sound has come, a vibration on the body, sound has come from outside, and a part of the mind recognizes and gives valuation, the vibration changes. How the mind changes into matter and matter changes into mind, how they keep on influencing each other, and an impurity has started. You have started reacting, craving, aversion. Your intellect does not know at all. You may suppress your anger, your craving, your aversion at the surface level, but deep inside you keep on boiling with anger, boiling with aversion, boiling with animosity, boiling with craving, boiling with ego. All those deep-rooted things are there. How can you come out of your misery? You have to understand the entire structure of your mind and also the entire structure of the body and the combination of the two, nama, rupa, mind, matter, how they are functioning. What religion has got to do? What nationality has got to do with this? What the color of a person has got to do with this? What a caste of a person has got to do with this? This is what is happening in everybody. Everybody out of the ignorance in the sense that what is happening inside, one does not know at all. One feels, I am not ignorant, I am a very wise person. I understand all the words of Buddha or Mahavira or Isa Masih, etc., etc. I am a very wise person. What wise person? You are just playing intellectual game. Have you experienced? Have you experienced what the enlightened person said? What he experienced, you must also experience the same thing. The enlightenment of Buddha can help only one person. The reality that is experienced by Siddhartha Gautama helped only one person, none else, and that was Siddhartha Gautama. He became liberated from misery. Each individual has to develop one's own enlightenment, one's own wisdom of experience deep inside to come out of the misery, to get enlightened, to enjoy real peace and harmony within. For that one has to work. It doesn't happen by these discourses. It does not happen by these seminars, discussions, arguments. They are good. At least at the intellectual level, people start thinking, there is something, something wonderful which our country attained in the past and we are missing it now. We would have missed it forever if this technique had not gone to our neighboring country. We are so grateful, we should be so grateful to the neighboring country of Myanmar. They preserved this technique in its pristine purity from generation to generation, from generation to generation, just a few people, not the masses. A few people, they maintained it from teacher to pupil, from teacher to pupil, without adding anything to it, without taking out anything from it, as they got from India. In its pristine purity they maintained. We lost in our country. It just worked in this country for about 500 years. It worked very well. Somebody brought to me the rock edicts of Ashoka. I was amazed to see that. All these days I was thinking that Vipassana is a good meditation, a good technique which will help individual to help the society. But how it will go to the masses? People have to come to a course for 10 days previously, say about 50 years back. It was a course of 1.5 months. You can get this technique properly understood by participating a course of 45 days. Now in this fast-running world, it became so difficult. Nobody will come for a course like this. I would not have gone to my teacher if he called me, come for 45 days. So they reduced it. 1 month, little bit, you get something. 20 days, you get something. 15 days, something. 10 days, you get just the outline. At least you get something. Less than that, you get nothing. It's all right. They have 10 days. Now for people in masses to come for a 10-day course, how is it workable? Very difficult. But it was a surprise, a very pleasant surprise to see the words on this rock. Ashoka says that before me, there were many rulers and all of them wanted that the people of the country should live in harmony, should live a dhammic life, a good life, have respect for the elders, have love for the younger ones, a good relation between this sect and that sect. All the previous kings wanted that. They were not successful. And he claims, I am successful. And then he says, how I am successful? Partly because he started spreading this wonderful teaching throughout the country, and he has Dhamma Matya, the ministers, the secretaries, government officials, who are trained in this technique to go around and explain people what the real truth is. Not to convert people from one religion to another religion, nothing doing. He talks of Dhamma, not Bodha Dhamma. Every addict says Dhamma. And you go and see the master's word, the enlightened one's word, only Dhamma. I am told that for 500 years, in this country, nobody used the word Bodha, only Dhamma, Dhamma, Dhamma. Dhamma is universal. The moment it becomes Bodha Dhamma, it is limited to people who call themselves Bodha. But an enlightened person does not teach to limited people. It is for all. Dhamma is for everyone. It is law of nature, which is applicable to one and all. You generate anger, you are bound to become miserable. You call yourself a Buddhist or a Hindu or Muslim, Christian, makes no difference. You are bound to become miserable. you come out of the anger, purify your mind, start generating love, compassion, goodwill. You are bound to feel peace and harmony within. You call yourself a Buddha or a Hindu or a Christian or a Muslim, makes no difference. Law of nature is law of nature, universal. This is what an enlightened person teaches. So Dhamma is teaching Dhamma. And this is why I am successful, because these people go around and teach Dhamma. And then he says, not only that, because I teach meditation. And then he says, the result that has come out is not because of these teachings at the level of sermons and all. It is the meditation which has made me successful. My people have become so peaceful, so happy. So it was a mass affair. An emperor of the country says, I am successful. My people in the country are living a good life. They have changed for better. If it was wrong, people would not allow that rock addict to remain there. They would have smashed it. It remains there for the last 2,200 years. Experiment was already done in Vipassana to the masses. The country changes. The world will change. Of course, at this stage, it looks how it will work, how more and more people will come, and how such courses can be held. Now, our Inspector General, Kiran Bedi, she has given me the confidence that there can be courses of 1,000 people also. And it was successful. My teacher predicted, when information went to him, just after 1 year I came in this country, the courses started with 12 people, 14 people, 15 or 20, 50. Then the course was 100. And people in Burma were very happy when the news went there. Oh, Goenka is teaching a course of 100 students. My teacher laughed. He said, one day he will teach a course of 1,000 students. And this is what she did. 1,000 students came. More will come. The need is there. It works. It gives a result. It is so scientific, so pragmatic, so logical. No blind faith is involved. It's a pure science of mind and matter, interaction of mind and matter. How, because of our ignorance as to what is happening at the level of mind and matter deep inside, we keep on generating impurities after impurities, make ourselves unhappy, make others unhappy. If you understand that at the actual level, experiential level, when you understand that reality, we start coming out of it. I see people coming to the courses. On the first day, with so much of melancholy on their face. Here also in the prison, over 1,000 people sitting in front of me, so much of melancholy on their face, so much of worry, so much of anxiety. And I was getting the vibration of those people, so much of anger, hatred. I am brought here with a great injustice. I have done nothing wrong. They keep on justifying whatever they have done, and some cases really, they might be innocent, who knows. So much of anger, so much of aversion. Somebody says that if when I go out, so-and-so was responsible for my coming to the prison. When I go out, I may have to come again to the prison. I don't mind, I'll kill him. I'll kill that judge. I'll kill that witness. So much of anger. When someone sees these people, there is so much of compassion. So much of suffering is there. They are suffering because they are away from their near and dear ones. That itself is a big suffering. They can't live as they like. And over and above that, out of ignorance, they are generating this anger. Anger, aversion. They are multiplying that misery. What is happening? And they are doing all that without knowing what they are doing. Nobody wants to harm oneself. Nobody wants to do that. And yet, we keep on doing the same thing. We are harming ourselves. When they start realizing, when they start seeing things inside, look, when I generate anger, I am not harmed. That's somebody outside. But I have harmed myself. Look, I become more miserable. Not that in 10 days they come out of all their old behavior pattern, but a change starts, and a change for better. They start realizing. Today on the 10th day, it happens in every case, in every course, there is a glow on the face of the people. There is so much of peace on the face of their people, which is manifestation of the peace inside. Vipassana works. In this course in the jail, quite a large number of them were Muslims, quite a large number of them were Sikhs, Hindus, quite a large number of them were foreigners from other countries. I was told more than 10 or 15 countries, there were people around there. Makes no difference. Human being is human being. How can you differentiate? Anybody who's breaking the law of nature becomes miserable. The law of nature is don't generate impurity in your mind. Otherwise, you will be punished. You keep your mind pure and you will be rewarded. This is the law of nature, applicable to everyone. And this is what one starts realizing by practicing Vipassana. Observing this reality within oneself, this is not a meditation of other different types. We are not here to condemn other techniques. But when you say meditation, something comes in the mind that you get concentrated on some object, a word, a mantra, or a vision, a form, or any object, and you keep on repeating that object in your mind, and you get concentrated. Vipassana has nothing to do with that. From the very beginning, you start observing the truth about your mind and your matter. And continue for 10 days the truth about your mind and matter, the interaction of mind and matter, how one is influencing the other, how one is getting influenced by the other, how out of ignorance one is reacting, and how by reaction one becomes miserable, and how this misery keeps on multiplying, keeps on overpowering you, and how you can come out of it. You know your misery, and you know the real cause of your misery. You know how to come out of the misery. This is universal, not sectarian. I am sure the seminar that you are having here and discussing various aspects of the society's problem and how Vipassana will help here will also give you inspiration to experience the truth yourself. If all this seminar becomes only an intellectual exercise, only an intellectual entertainment, I'll be very sorry. One should not waste one's time in all these things. One must understand what is Vipassana and get inspiration. But let me try. People come, many people come, just to give a trial, a fair trial. But at the back of the mind, sometimes people have, as I had in my mind, first time I went to my teacher, there was a lot of hesitation because I come from a very staunch, conservative, Sanatani Hindu family, and from the childhood we are trained not to be Nastic. If you don't believe in God, if you don't believe in soul, you will go to hell. I don't want to go to hell. So I believe in God. I believe in soul. And look, due to certain circumstances, I'm going to this teacher, and he's a Buddhist. And these Buddhists, they are Nastic. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in soul. What will happen? If I also become somebody without believing in God and soul, what will happen? Such hesitation, bound to be there. Later on, people realize, whether you believe in God or not believe in God, whether you believe in soul or don't believe in soul, the problem is still there. I come from a country where more than 80% of the people do not believe that there is a soul inside. They do not believe that there is a creator God. They don't believe that. And now I have come to a country where more than 80% people believe that there is a soul inside. They believe that there is a God creator. And with a very unbiased mind, I observe both. I find no difference. No difference. People there also, they keep on generating craving, aversion, become miserable. Here also people generate craving, aversion, miserable. Then what this belief or not belief will help? What you started doing in the name of religion? Religion was nothing but an art of living. How to come out of this misery of craving and aversion? All these philosophical games, leave it to the philosophers. Let them fight out. Dhamma has nothing to do with all that. Dhamma is truth. Dhamma is law. Dhamma is nature. Truth of the law of nature, universal law of nature. This belief or that belief, leave it aside. So people come to the course initially with all these kinds of conditioning of the mind. They keep on hesitating, what we are doing, is it good? I say you give it trial for 10 days. Leave aside. All those subjects where we differ, keep them aside. This is what Buddha also used to do. When people used to come and argue with him, he used to say, well, wherever we don't agree, leave that aside. But wherever we agree, let us talk that. We agree about Sila, living a good life, not to perform any unwholesome action at the vocal level or physical level. You agree? I agree? All right, keep it here. We agree to develop the mastery over the mind, to become master of one's own mind, samadhi. You agree? I agree? All right. We must purify our mind by our personal experience going inside. There should not be any impurity in the mind. You agree? Yes, I agree. All right. Sila, samadhi, panya, we all agree. Now we agree at the intellectual level. Come, let us experience it. Let us experience it. Try. And you will teach the same vipassana? Try. Give it a trial. After 10 days, they start smiling. This is wonderful. This is what I was looking for. And I got it. The same thing is happening today. People come with all the conditioned mind. This philosophy, this belief, that belief. When they come to the course, the teaching is sila. You live a good moral life at the physical and vocal level. Samadhi, you develop mastery over your own mind. And panya, pragya, you purify your mind with your own wisdom, with your own experience of the truth inside. And the whole technique, from the beginning to the end, no sectarianism allowed. The object, when you are training your mind, when you want to become master of your mind, you use your respiration, just respiration. And you can't say the respiration is Hindu or Muslim or Buddha or Christian. Respiration is a respiration. Everyone has that. You just observe the respiration coming, going, passing through this nostril, passing through that nostril. It is deep. If it is shallow, it is shallow. Not a breathing exercise. Don't try to interfere with the natural flow of your breath. Just observe. The whole process is to develop the faculty of observing the truth pertaining to yourself. And you are observing breath. 1 day, 2 days, 3 days. The mind becomes subtler and subtler, sharper and sharper. It gets concentrated, but at the same time becomes sharper and sharper, more and more sensitive. And the attention is on this area, the entrance of the nostril. Now what happens? Besides this breath, what else is going on there? Throughout the body, every moment, some biochemical reaction is going on, some electromagnetic reaction is going on, some sensation or the other is there throughout the body. Wherever there is a life, there is some sensation going on. One does not know because the conscious mind is so gross and these things are happening at such a subtler level. Now by the practice of 3 days on respiration, one starts experiencing some sensation in this area. Wonderful opening. And now with that, on the fourth day, on the fifth day, one starts experiencing sensations throughout the body. Everywhere there is some sensation or the other. Something or the other is happening. Again one starts observing it. Now this becomes your object of observation. What is happening within this framework of the body? Now what Buddhism about it? What Hinduism? What Christianity? The sensation is sensation. There can't be a Hindu sensation or a Buddhist sensation or a Christian sensation. Sensation. Something is happening in the body. Heat, cold, perspiration, throbbing, pulsing, heaviness, numbness, tingling. Something is happening. And you are just observing. You do nothing. Just observe. Let things happen as they happen. Don't try to interfere with this. Vipassana has been getting permeated in this country, although the technique lost for the masses. But all our saints, when I go to the words of the saints of this country, I find they have been practicing Vipassana. A great saint of our country, he says, Thapiyan jai ओ कितने हुई आपो आप निरंजन सोई था पियान जाई. You can't impose, don't impose anything and don't create anything. Let things happen as they happen. Apoa, truth, truth as it is, this is God. Truth is God. This person must have been practicing vipassana, then only he talks in that language. Thapiya na jai, kita na hoi. This is what a student of vipassana is taught. Just things happen, let allow things to happen as they happen. If it is pain, it is pain. If it is pressure, it is pressure. If it is heat, it is heat. If there is perspiration, perspiration. Just observe. Just observe. Don't give preference to one. Don't have prejudice against the other. Just observe. Just observe. And as you keep on observing, entire law of nature becomes clear. Well, a sensation has arisen. And if it is pleasant, look, a part of mind has started reacting. Craving, craving. It was unpleasant. A part of the mind has started reacting, aversion, aversion. And whenever, either craving or aversion, I lose the balance of my mind. I lose the equanimity of my mind. I lose the equipoise of my mind. I become miserable. Look, whenever I react, I become miserable. Whether I react with raga or I react with dvesha, I become miserable. This reality, when one starts experiencing, one is experiencing the truth. Not intellectual game. Not emotional or devotional game, actual experience. And then one starts changing this behavior pattern. One is becoming slave. When I go to prison and give courses, I told them, and it's truth, that you feel that you are in prison. But the fact is, the entire world, every individual in the world is in prison. You are in prison of your own behavior pattern. You are in prison of your own negativities. And you are suffering. You can't come out of that. It's not only that you are suffering, everybody is suffering outside. Because this prison, one does not know that I am in prison. One does not know that I am suffering inside. At the surface level, one is happy with this amusement, this sensual pleasure. That is just a very small part of the mind, say 5% of the mind is enjoying all that. Another part of the mind, the bigger chunk of the mind, all the time in tension, all the time in misery. Realize that. Observe it. Observe this truth. Then you will yourself want to come out of it. What a big misery inside. What a big misery inside. When the enlightened one said there is misery all around, people without understanding, and they say that this is a path of very pessimistic path. Talking about misery, misery. Yes, this is a truth, that there is misery. But the enlightened one says that there is a way to come out of misery. If you had just said there is misery, no way out, yes, it was pessimistic. It is so optimistic, so optimistic. A way out is there, and such a wonderful way out. So scientific, so rational, so result-oriented. Gives the result here and now. Not that after death you will get something. Yes, after death also you will get something. We don't deny that. But what you get now? If you don't get anything now and expect some miracle to happen after death, that is illusion. Delusion. It won't help you. As you start practicing Dhamma, you apply Dhamma in your life, benefit must come here and now. Akaliko, sandittiko. Now. The result must come now. And it starts coming. Within 10 days, people start experiencing and feeling, I feel much more happier than what I felt previously. I feel a big burden has gone. I feel so light. What light? The body weight remains the same. The burden of your impurities have gone away. The burden of the negativity has gone away. And one feels so light, so light. This is all to be experienced. All the participants of this seminar, I would like them to spare 10 days of your life, not for my sake, for your own sake, for your own benefit. Give a trial, a fair trial to this technique. You won't become Buddhist. I don't make anybody a Buddhist. Let a Hindu be a Hindu, a Muslim, a Christian, become a good Hindu, a good Muslim, a good Christian, become a good human being. If you are not a good human being, how can you be a good Hindu or a good Muslim or a good Christian or a good Buddhist? The whole path of Dhamma, is a path to make one a good human being, how to live peacefully within, harmoniously within, and how to generate nothing but peace and harmony for others, so that others also live so peacefully. A way of life, an art of living, give a trial. May this seminar give you inspiration to spare 10 days of your life and experience the truth, wonderful truth, discovered by a wonderful scientist of our country, the super scientist. The modern science, the modern scientist, they discover things at the material level or even something at the psychic level just for some comforts. But here is somebody who discovered truth at a deep mind and matter level, which takes you out of all the miseries of this life, all the miseries. Give a trial. May all of you who are participating in this seminar find time, have this wonderful experience, come out of your misery, and enjoy real peace, real harmony, real peace to you all, real harmony to you all. Real happiness to you all.
Bhavatu sarva mangalam.